Yeah, thank you very much for staying on. It's sunny outside, the last session, the comparative bit for today's conference. And I'm going to attempt to map the relationship between the Council of Europe and the European Union in the field of criminal justice. 15 minutes is not enough for that, but I will do my best to give some thoughts and form a presentation to be the basis for discussion. Now, criminal justice, the field of criminal justice is a field which is very sensitive, as we all know. It is central to state sovereignty. It is central to the configuration of the relationship between the individual and the state. And it is very closely linked to the question of fundamental rights. It is an interesting case study when one looks at the relationship between the Council of Europe and the EU. For two reasons. If you look at it from the perspective of the Council of Europe, this is a field where, in terms of norm entrepreneurship, the Council of Europe has been very strong. Sometimes it is not very visible. We talk about bigger issues, in a sense, the European Convention on Human Rights, minorities. But if you look in terms of conventions, a lot of the 200 conventions that were mentioned earlier today are in the field of criminal justice. And the Council of Europe, I categorize the action of the Council of Europe in the field into two phases. The one is the more traditional phase. I call it traditional because it has to do with judicial cooperation in criminal matters. This goes back to the 50s, 60s, 70s, a series of very important conventions, including the European Convention on Extradition and the European Convention on Mutual Legal Assistance. These are very important texts for judicial cooperation in criminal matters. And these are, I think, the unsung children of the Council of Europe from a very early stage. So that's the first phase. The second phase is a more modern phase, which is a post-Cold War phase, where the Council of Europe has emerged as a very strong global actor in producing norms in areas of crime that are deemed as new security threats. In IR literature, there's a lot of talk about the replacement of the Cold War threat with a series of new security threats, including organized crime, terrorism, trafficking. If you look at the recent work of the Council of Europe, there are major conventions in the field, in the fields of money laundering, in the fields of terrorism, in the fields of trafficking in human beings, in the fields of cybercrime, among other things. So this the Council of Europe has been really strong in pushing, in creating norms and in pushing international standards in the field, creating public international law. These are hard law instruments. If you look at it from the perspective of the European Union, this is a fascinating area because in the last 10 years, you've witnessed an immense growth of criminal law at the European Union level. The entry into force of the Lisbon Treaty in December 2009 meant that the very complex institutional structure of the EU and the various pillars have been abolished. Now, criminal law is a streamlined EU competence, and we have had a constant adoption of measures at the European Union level in criminal matters. And of course, if you look at the two institutions together, there are some questions that are asked. The first one is, how does the EU use its membership of the Council of Europe in developing its internal acquis? And in that context, two institutional factors are relevant. First of all, that the EU today is, as we know, a union of 27. It is an enlarged EU. The membership, the EU member states, which are also Council of Europe member states, come to a great number, and I don't know whether they outnumber the Council of Europe member states who are not in EU member states, but if the EU wishes to speak with one voice in Council of Europe negotiations, they are in a very strong position. So that's the one thing. The other aspect of it is what happens when the EU interacts with the Council of Europe in order to project the norms beyond the level of the European Union. And I'm going to divide my last 9 minutes into three-minute slots and talk to you first about how what is the relationship between the Council of Europe Conventions and the EU acquis on criminal law. Secondly, how does the EU deal with the Council of Europe in terms of its own external relations? And thirdly, how do these two bodies and organizations interact as regards a very important element of norm creations and sustainability, which has been mentioned throughout the day, which is the level of compliance and implementation. So how do EU compliance mechanisms and Council of Europe compliance mechanisms come together? And underlying this analysis is the question, which perhaps we can discuss later, are we talking about competition? Are we talking about cooperation? Is the Council of Europe really threatened by the European Union? Or are we now in an era of greater synergy and confluence in their aims? So, first of all, the relationship between the Council of Europe Conventions in Criminal Matters and the EU criminal law, the internal union law in the field. I would distinguish between three different elements of this normative framework. The first element is very traditional. It has to do with the traditional parts of judicial cooperation in criminal matters, extradition, mutual legal assistance, and various other conventions at the Council of Europe level. You see now, this is pretty straightforward. As the European Union moves towards greater integration inside and the area of freedom, security, and justice has been created, the EU is creating its own instruments on judicial cooperation. For example, something you may have heard about, the European Arrest Warrant Framework Decision. As regards the EU member states, this replaces the European Convention on Extradition. So it's a conscious choice, as far as the EU member states are concerned, to use their own more integrated instruments for judicial cooperation. The situation with substantive criminal law is a bit more nuanced. As I said, the Council of Europe has adopted in the last 10-15 years a series of very important and very avant-garde conventions in criminal matters. And especially in the 90s, this has been done in an era where the EU acquis in the field, the EU legislation, was not really very much developed. So what you saw there is, in spite of its internal constitutional problems, in spite of its very complex legal basis, the pillars, and the lack of legal personality of the European Union up until 2009, the EU member states found a way to be present at Council of Europe negotiations, to coordinate, to the extent possible, their position, and to push for the adoption of Council of Europe standards, at least in some elements. So it was not... the EU was not there to jeopardize Council of Europe norms, it was there to help the Council of Europe adopt standards. And why is that? I will come back to it later. It's linked, I think, with the enlargement process, the accession negotiations that were taking place at the time. However, what has happened once the EU has become more assertive in the field, especially in the last 5 or 6 years, is that the EU pushes towards the adoption of norms at the Council of Europe level, but at the same time wants to have a safeguard that as regards the relationship between the EU member states, the EU can go further. And these are called disconnection clauses. They are inserted in various treaties in criminal matters, and they say that as far as the EU is concerned, this treaty does not prejudice the adoption, the application of different standards among the EU member states. Now, this is very interesting, and this I would welcome really your views, especially from the gurus of the Council of Europe who are in the room now. From the point of view of public international law, this has been criticized because it has been deemed as leading to the fragmentation of international law, that you know, your member states agree to a norm, but then agree to ignore it if you know they agree to something else. So this is a more international law point of view. European Union lawyers view this, on the contrary, as something which is very natural because it is consonant with the autonomy of the Union legal order and its special features. So it is not yet just another international organization. It is a union which is highly integrated, and if it has powers to act beyond the Council of Europe, then so be it. So you have this kind of tension. The EU pushes standards at the Council of Europe level, helps create norms at the Council of Europe level, but it is not committed into implementing these at the domestic level. I think that the importance of the adoption of Council of Europe standards at this point for the European Union is that it will use the standards in its external relations. It's not so much for its internal consumption, but it is for external production. The third level of conventions has to do with human rights, and we talked about the ECHR, and there are a number of other Council of Europe conventions which have an incidental effect on European criminal law, and these are conventions which are related and recommendations which are related to data protection. And if you look at the development of European Union police cooperation measures in the 90s and the last decade, the Union tried to compensate for the lack of EU privacy standards, EU data protection standards in the field of the police, by including in all the EU measures which had to do with the exchange of police data, the Council of Europe safeguards, 1981 Convention, 1987, I think, recommendation on data protection in the context of the police. So you pull the Council of Europe standards into your domestic EU legal order in order to protect, to provide some safeguards in areas where you are yourself reluctant to adopt a domestic norm. That's the first part. Now, the second point that I want to make is how do Council of Europe norms feature in EU external relations? And I think this is a very important and quite growing, emerging area of interest. First of all, this has been mentioned already, membership of the Council of Europe and its obligations has been key for EU accession negotiations in the 90s especially, where, as was mentioned earlier, the EU was more reluctant to open its arms towards the Eastern European countries than the Council of Europe. You have a process which is starting, and the first thing that the EU is doing when it opens accession negotiations is saying that, yes, you are members of the Council of Europe, you should comply with the Council of Europe standards. And even now, if you look at both accession negotiations, but also the relations of the Union with its neighbors in the European neighborhood policy and relations with countries like Russia, if you read the relevant documents, there are still expressed references. The EU is asking these countries to promptly ratify and implement Council of Europe standards. So Council of Europe norms are used actively in EU external relations. The third element, and I finish with that, is the element of monitoring, of compliance. I think this is very important. It merits a whole different paper. We heard a lot about expert groups and independent monitors to monitor Council of Europe conventions. The European Union has used this to inspire its own emphasis on peer review. The Lisbon Treaty talks about peer review in the area of freedom, security and justice. If you look at areas like corruption or money laundering, you see that the EU increasingly is using Council of Europe monitoring mechanisms such as GRECO or MONEYVAL in order to ensure compliance with standards by its own member states as well. The MONEYVAL evaluation to assess compliance of Council of Europe countries with the money laundering conventions, one of its benchmarks is also EU law, so you have an interesting confluence of standards and interconnection. And the last point I want to make is that very recently the European Commission has actually proposed the accession of the European Union after the entry into force of the Lisbon Treaty to the mechanism of assessing compliance with the Council of Europe Anti-Corruption Convention, which is the GRECO mechanism. If this happens, then it means that it will also be the EU institutions themselves which are going to be subject to monitoring by the Council of Europe mechanisms. So competition, cooperation, maybe both. Thank you.